Going Linux, episode 236, an interview with Door-to-Door Geek. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, an interview with Steve McLaughlin, a.k.a. Door-to-Door Geek. Hey, Bill, how you doing?
Doing good, Larry, doing good. How are you today, besides staying busy?
Always staying busy. Yeah, I'm doing well. And I have to say, Bill, that this episode you recorded, conducted the interview, and edited all by yourself. You did a fantastic job. Steve sounds great on the recording. You sound great on the recording. Your volume is a little bit low, but I'm going to see if I can adjust that in the final mix. And other than that, I think it's perfect. You did a great job. Thanks.
Still got learning a little bit, learning curve. I don't know why that my volume's low. I'm going to have to start checking a little closer and see if I can't change it up. But like I said, learning curve. Don't shoot me too hard.
no problem at all. You did great.
But I think you're going to find that Door has some interesting ideas and opinions about Linux, about, getting things done, how to use Linux. I found it very interesting when I interviewed him, and I hope our listeners enjoy it too. He's a real good guy. I think they're going to enjoy it.
Yeah. So before we get into that, I understand you have a bit of a rant.
Oh, I have a rant. Okay. Why do these streaming services like Netflix and this new one from Redbox use Silverlight? I have my system, and I finally settled on using Ubuntu 12.04 as the base system, and then I've been virtualizing Windows 8, PC, Linux OS, FreeBSD on top of it. And I even went ahead and put Windows 7, etc. on it just in case I need to do some testing.
Sure.
So it's been working really well. I've been really pleased how well Ubuntu's been doing. I've actually grown quite fond of the Unity interface. Things are working great. It's, I really think I'm getting the hang of these virtual machines. So a friend of mine said, you should try this Redbox streaming. And I'm like, okay, I sure will. So, of course, it won't run on Linux because it's Silverlight, and Silverlight, they're so afraid you're going to steal something from them.
Well, so Silverlight is provided by Microsoft, of course, and it's their multimedia delivery system, if you will, which, of course, is not compatible with anything that's not Microsoft.
Yeah, it's just totally hard to work with if it's not a Windows or a Mac. And the Mac system is kind of wonky in my opinion, but not really talking about that. You can buy these discs from the store, but if you try to stream it, they want you to use a Silverlight that does not work well. It has lots of bugs. And when it was one of the bugs, it would not run adequately on my virtual machine with Windows 7. It would work, and then it would die. And it kept saying that the system had changed. And I'm sitting there, what could change on this system? I reset it. I followed all their little help, things like, oh, do this, turn this on, turn this off, restart this, et cetera, et cetera. The answer to everything is restart it.
Well, that's the Microsoft genuine advantage, right?
Well, it finally got to the point of I called their tech support and said, look, I said, it keeps saying that something's changing. And there's nothing's changed. Memory hasn't changed. I've restarted this machine. I've restarted the browser. You only can use one browser on top of it. You
Which
have to.
browser would that be?
Internet Explorer, of course.
Oh,
But
okay.
you don't understand. There's a catch to that because if you're running Windows 8, the Windows there's two. There's actually two browsers according to the tech guy.
Right, there's a 64-bit version and the 32-bit version,
And
right?
one operates from the desktop and one operates from the thing that they will not call Metro. And Silverlight doesn't work very well on the one that on the Metro side. So of course it throws up errors. Well, no matter what you do, it says that something in the system's changed, therefore you must be trying to rip it or steal their videos so you can no longer watch. So after about 2 days of just banging my head against the wall, I just canceled. And what I don't understand is they keep using the Silverlight, but Microsoft has said that they're actually moving away from it. Why don't they use something that everybody can use? I mean,
You mean like industry standard?
yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, well, Microsoft likes to establish the industry standard so that then they can control the industry standard so that everybody has to adapt to their standard. And so that may have something to do with it.
Well, they call you when you cancel, they ask why you canceled. And I just wrote them out a nice long rant and said,
Oh, good.
yeah, it wasn't a nasty rant. It was like, this doesn't work. These are known bugs. You've got problems with Windows 8, and I'm not trying to rip you off. I mean, you can buy these disks if you want them. I just don't. We're into, where we can stream stuff. We're digital. I don't need to have a physical copy of everything. So I would much rather not deal with, CDs and stuff. I would like to be able just to download it and keep it as a digital copy or watch it streaming and be done with it. Anyway, I went on and I told them about this. Well, they sent an email back and they're like, well, we're working on something and stuff. And I finally just told them, I said, you can get this to work on Android, but you won't let it work on Linux. I mean, granted, we're not the biggest group out there computing, but you're throwing away a lot of money because I believe there's quite a few Linux users that would like to give you money to watch videos. Appeal to their inner greed. But they just don't get it. If it's not Microsoft or Mac, we don't count.
Well, we're a very tiny portion of the marketplace, so.
Yeah, well, I understand that, and
Unless you're talking about Chrome OS or Android users, and then we're the
yeah.
major portion of the
It's
marketplace.
just, there's better technologies out there
Yeah,
that
oh
they could
yeah.
use, and they would, just to say, you guys, we don't want your money. It's just frustrating because Windows has so much that's wrong with it that it's insane. And I choose not to run something like that. I mean, that's why I run it in a virtual machine. You can't do too much damage. I can always blow it away if I need to. But anyway, it's just frustrating because, if you bought something from iTunes or and you want to put it on and you move to Linux, well, it's all locked into all these systems. So this DRM keeps you from, I've already paid you for it. I'd like to use it. I mean,
Well,
it's frustrating when when you go back and forth and you try to work around And it's always, it's, well, you should use something that's, everybody uses. They just don't care.
Well, you
It's
know, Door-to-Door Geek is building his multimedia empire.
Yeah.
Maybe as part of that, when he gets his angel investor, maybe he can use part of that money to establish a new video streaming service that's compatible with everything.
Yeah. I've made a few decisions. I am now I know this is not the most efficient way, but I've decided that I've lost so much time and effort and money because, you can't move some of this stuff off their iTunes, it's got their DRM, especially videos or TV series. I've just decided if I can't, if it's not cross-platform, or and I and if it doesn't work under Linux, then I'm not going to buy it anymore. I'm going to choose to use like Ubuntu One or Amazon for my music. That just cuts out, hit them where the wallet is.
Sure.
But my thing is, I've got to, I'm throwing away money to these people, and I'm not, and I'm losing my stuff that I've licensed, paid for, whatever you want to say, because I'm not, I choose not to run a Windows or a Mac. So I would encourage everybody that, in the long run, it's a little more difficult, but look for the vendors that will let you take your music and take your videos with you, that don't lock you into one specific system. I think that would, maybe if enough people do that, they'll maybe decide that they should look at it again.
Yeah, that makes a lot of
Yeah.
sense.
Anyway, rant's done. I know it's just it was I dealt with that these guys for so long. I wanted to beat my head against the brick wall, for nonstop because they just no matter what you tell them, well, if you just would run Windows or Mac, you wouldn't have this problem. I
Yeah.
actually had one say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway,
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm done. Rant done.
All right. Well, let's listen to Dore rant for a little. He doesn't
Yeah.
rant. He
No, he
doesn't
didn't rant.
rant.
No.
No. But let's listen to Dore. You did a great job. And let's now let our listeners, each and every one of them, hear what Dore has to say, and then we'll be back at the end to make a comment or two.
All right, great.
Here you go.
Welcome to the Going Links Podcast, Door. It's been a long time coming. So, first off, how you doing?
Doing really good. Right now, when we're speaking, it's right before New Year's Eve, which means that we're on the cusp of my wedding anniversary. Yep, so I will be definitely busy the next day or so.
If you don't want
But
wife aggro, yes.
well, yeah, that's a given, sir. Happy wife equals happy life.
Life, yes. So, if it's not too personal, how many years?
It will be 10 glorious years of her not killing me.
Good answer. Good answer. Okay, so, Dore, I was at your website, and I should say websites, but I'll just for keep things nice and concise. It's website. You have like 13, 11 or 13 different podcasts. When do you sleep?
As little as possible, and it's typically very late at night.
Okay. So, we've been trying to get together for I say probably about a little under a year or over a year just to kind of touch base with you. And since that time you're I'm gonna call you the next twit here because you just keep growing and growing and growing. Tell me a little bit about your shows. Tell me the ones that are growing, which ones you enjoy doing, any future plans, anything that would be interesting. I do listen regularly to Linux for the rest of us. You and that's I think it's Cody Cooper or Super Coop.
Yes, sir.
All right, so I'm gonna turn it over to you. Just why don't you give us a quick rundown of the some of your shows and tell us a little bit about it, and I'll jump in if I have any questions.
Sure. Well, it's been hard for us to connect because of basically all the shows. And if you go to podnest.com/calendar, you'll see it's about 5 nights a week. I do a podcast in one shape, way, or form. I will say, like you, when I was younger, I had a pretty strong speech impediment. With later in life, it's gotten lesser. I think with me, at least, it's mostly confidence issue. And then I discovered podcasting. And as the old story goes, now I don't shut up. I will say, the Podnuts Network is mainly geared around computer enthusiast. It was originally strictly computer repair. After constant badgering in the nicest way possible, I got Steve C to start other shows. And now, yes, we are up to 13. I am not on all of them. Steve C, who was the former owner of Podnuts, is now only on one of them. So the network has definitely grown in a very large degree. And I will say, I just did a quote unquote full website backup. We hold all of the content on our own servers, so no one can take it down. We know who's downloading and everything else. It's over 1,000 shows, totaling more than 45 gigabytes of data.
Oh, is that all? Golly.
That's all.
I thought you could fit it all in one USB key. Come on now. No,
That's a big
seriously.
USB key.
Yeah, that's a lot of data. And you host all that yourself.
Not
I mean not
everything.
host, but you have all that data on your own servers.
Yes. I
Wow.
basically do all of the post-production on every episode. I coordinate the show's existence, and then we coordinate how I get the files, and now I get all the files from everyone via BitTorrent Sync because it's beautiful. And I basically do all the post work on the episodes, and I will say that has turned out to be maybe half of my time devoted to podcast.com. And I will say, you guys are the exception of the rule in the podcasting world. And I think Podnuts is too, in the sense of a great deal of podcasts out there put out content with very lacking audio quality. You guys are basically the first podcast that inspired me to have really good sounding audio. Because I was listening to all the other Linux podcasts, and for the majority of them, they sound pretty bad. So Podnuts' goal is to control what we can control in the realm of quality of audio content. Content comes and goes, but quality is something we can control. So we really try to uphold that. Not every show can meet those standards because of technical difficulties or other issues. But for the most part, they're really all high audio quality. Looking at the total list of shows, I'm technically not on four of the shows out of the 13.
Okay. Now let me stop you there for just a second. First off, I've got to let you know that Larry's the wizard when it comes to making the show sound good. Because if it wasn't for him, it would be absolutely horrible. I'm still learning because he cuts out all the uhs and duh and all the other stuff that you do that you unconsciously do when you talk normally. But I also wonder, I heard a rumor that you're trying to do your entire production from beginning to end using nothing but open source tools. Is that correct?
Well, I will say I first had the initial goal of just using Linux for all of my work. But to be honest, I decided to take it one step further, and I'm trying to use nothing but GPL type software whenever possible. Now, it is not like I am a gray beard, even though I have a gray beard. I'm more than willing to use other tools when it's the best tool to use. But I am actively trying to use only quote unquote free-ish software. And I've been, for the most part, really successful with that. I'm really happy with the output. I'm really happy with the workflow I have and the amount of time it actually takes me to edit content. In hindsight, it's not bad, but with that many shows, it adds up to a lot of time.
Yeah, it seems like, let me guess, a couple hours a show, or have you got it down a little
Oh,
quicker?
on a much quicker than that, thanks to
Really?
Q, thanks to Q Tractor. If you think about it like a website, okay, when you use something like WordPress, you basically have themes and templates where all you have to do is punch the content in, and everything else takes care of itself. Well, it's the same thing with audio. I use Q Tractor that allows basically templates for individuals' audio tracks. So as long as the people use the same mic in the same room with the same settings and the same surroundings, I already have their gain tweaked, their equalizer tweaked, their noise gate tweaked, and their noise gate and something else. There's a couple things, and I have them all pre-tweaked to where basically I just have to drop in the audio and run, not like Audacity, where basically every time you do it, you have to redo everything over again.
Now, Audacity is a great tool, but it's I only use like 1/10 of what it can do. Larry knows a little bit more, but that Q track, they say Q Tractor is what it's called. Q Tractor? I thought it sounds like a pretty cool little tool. And is that GPL?
It is 100% free software, GPL software, and I will say it's so quote unquote free, it won't even let me output to MP3.
Whoa. Okay, so it goes
So
dog, huh?
it goes to AUG, FLAC, WAV, things like that. Now I will say Audacity, I still use that tool because Q Tractor is much more of a music preparation tool and not a spoken word podcast kind of tool. So I still use Audacity to do noise removal and some compression sometimes.
Okay, so now that we kind of got the idea of your workflow, tell me about one of your shows that I've only listened a few times, but it seems like it's one of the more popular ones called Android App Addicts. What's that show usually entail?
Oh, it usually entails a train wreck, which most of the listeners think is funny. We basically, the original premise of the show, we laughed at because we said there's no way there's going to be enough Android applications to actually make a weekly show on. But I literally badgered Steven that we have to do this because Android's going to be big. We're up to episode 160, so it's approximately 3 years deep. So we started this 3 years ago. And the apps never stop coming. It is an insane flood. So basically every show we now do round robin fashion of each of the hosts bringing an app, talking about the app. Half of the time we make fun of the other one for bringing the app, in one shape, way, or form, just because that's what we do. We are in first and foremost, I think, friends. We get along. So the show is just a excuse for us to hang out and talk.
In other words, get together and make fun of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let me guess, you have an iPhone,
Always, always.
right? So just what kind of Android phone are you using these days?
Oh man, I got an old phone. It was gifted to me by a listener in Boston because I had a Droid X2,
Ooh,
which
okay.
is a very locked down device.
Yeah, it was a solid phone.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Motorola makes physical quality maybe some of the best phones out there, in my opinion.
Yes.
Right now, what I have is a Samsung Galaxy Nexus, literally a 2-year-old phone.
Have you,
And I will,
oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
well, and I was gonna say, thanks to the other show, Mobile Dynasty, and the people on that show, we also talked about how to root and ROM your device, aka install a different operating system on it, which everyone already does with their computers. So I don't understand why someone would question why we do it on a phone.
Yeah.
So because of that, I have a very functional, very useful phone running an operating system that's more advanced than what would be on it by default because of the Verizon stopped at 4.22. Well, I'm running 4.3 on my device thanks to roaming. And I am definitely shocked at how well running a maintained phone is and how even the brand newest of the apps from today run on it.
I mean, is that a Cyanogen mod?
Actually, yes. I am literally, I'm not a CyanogenMod fan throughout my history and tendencies, and I'm not technically a fan of what they're doing to become in incorporated. With that said, who am I to judge these people? They're trying to make a new industry for themselves. So, with that said, my personal belief is not how it really should happen. They should keep doing what they're doing. But I will say, they released an app that's CyanogenMod 11 compatible only called Screencast. This is the first
Wow.
application I've been able to find because I've tried them all. Let me tell you, that will let me record the screen and audio in high quality with very, very, very little lag.
Wow. Now that sounds like a handy little tool to have. I do know one thing. I just, and you probably heard me gush about it, I got the new Droid Max Ultra. And I cannot believe how far that hardware has come since when I bought the original. If you might remember the droid that you had to actually the slider, and
The OG.
no, I don't know what the OG. It's the one that was it was a candy bar and you had to slide it up, and I just thought that was the greatest. And then I get this monster, and it just does everything. Alarm clocks. I mean, I think it can fly the Enterprise. But anyway, I just kept on gushing and gushing about it. Love that Android phone. I just can't believe how fast and how hard that operating system's going, and it doesn't look like it's going to slow down at all. So I think Android App Addicts is a well placed to show. Now, Linux for the Rest of Us, now that's kind of been around for a while, and that's just basically what.
Wow, it's really hard for me to describe that show. I think it's because I'm too close to the forest to see the trees. Not that that's a real expression, mind you. It's me and Cody Cooper, who I will say I will thank everyone in advance for their patience. Cody Cooper technically works in an industry that was heavily saturated with money, business, and customers for the last couple months. I'll just say that. He should lighten his load should get lightened here very soon, and we should pick back up on shows. But that show is basically me and Cody, and kind of like Linux Reality, kind of like Going Linux. What we try to do is we try to talk about semi-advanced and new user Linux things, but to make sure we always talk about them in the scope of a new user, like what these things are, what they actually mean to you, what's the immediate payoffs to these tools or these services or these applications or these distributions. And it's almost news focused, but it's really more of just a back and forth.
Well, I know it should have a tagline on that show. Because I listen to that show anytime a new episode comes out, and the tagline you should have for that show is "No elitism allowed," because that is just very easy for people to understand. So I quite enjoy it, and I can if anybody's wants to know, wants another friendly, easy approach show, that would be one of the best to go now. Needless to say, all your shows are very approachable, but the one that I'm sitting here now, I have no idea. What is Geeksters?
Okay, Geeksters was just brought onto the network less than 2 months ago. It used to be at Geeksters.tv. It was basically a show put on by a bunch of Podnuts listeners and other podcast listeners. that just wanted to talk daily shop.
Oh, okay.
So when it started out, since then, the hosts have changed multiple times just because of one guy got elected to office, so he doesn't deal with computers anymore, so he can't be on the show technically.
Okay.
But right now it's Martin Obando, Tim Bauermeister, Mitch Heyman, and PC Freddy. It's two technicians who own their own business who are knee-deep in this stuff every day, everything from CryptoLocker, small area networks, Active Directory, that kind of stuff, even fixing iPhones and iPads. And then there's two guys on the show who are more hobbyist enthusiasts who, in my opinion, keep the other two guys to make sure that they're grounded and they talk in normal terms when they talk about tech. That, to me, is one of the most helpful podcasts if you want to learn about general fixing computers.
Okay. Well, the one I would figure that would be targeted at computers is, I love the title, is My Hard Drive Died. Boy, has that has happened to me. So,
yeah.
Tell me what this one's about.
Okay, well, first let me give you a little brief history synopsis on hard drives.
Okay.
One, never own a hard drive more than 600 gigabytes. It is highly, highly prone to failure in comparison to a drive 500 gigabytes, number one. Number two, SSDs still don't give you a proper warning when they're going to die. So if you're talking safety, small, less than 500 gigabyte spinning drive is your best bet. If you just want performance, just go get an SSD. But My Hard Drive Died is basically a industry-leading expert named Scott Moulton, who owns the company called MyHardDriveDied.com, who also literally spans the globe teaching industries, companies, and governments how to perform hard drive forensics, hard drive diagnostics, and hard drive data recovery.
Wow.
This is the guy who, and I really don't say this lightly, but this is the only kind of real world comparison I can get to this guy. This guy is quite literally the Michael Jordan of hard drives. I do not think there's anyone else on the planet willing to talk about hard drives and yet knows as much about everything about how hard drives work. He has a business right now. The business is technically in Atlanta, Georgia, I believe, where he does his hard drive forensics. He's called into court a bunch of times. He gets hired by every three-letter agency in the world to tell them how to get data off of hard drives. He travels to Australia, constantly all over the U.S., teaching these classes, literally hands-on classes where everybody in front of them basically has a bare-bones opened-up computer where they're doing data recovery on it.
Wow.
Yeah, this is the guy who knows how to hide data on a hard drive and how to get anything hidden off the hard drive off.
Someone you don't want mad at you when you're trying to hide something, apparently.
No.
Well, I will say, I usually go with 1 terabyte drives. I'm very particular about which drives I have in my machines. I've had better luck with certain manufacturers. Now, I do agree with you on one thing. When I buy a smaller drive, I tend to buy a 320 gig drive. They just seem to, I have one that just never dies, but I do, and I use that for like backup. But my big main drive is usually a Western Digital, Kevlar Black or somewhere, one of the better Western Digitals. I've never had a problem with a Western Digital. Others, I've had them fail. So I think there is some legitimacy to what you said. You go above that 500 and you're starting to really, get kind of wonky.
Well, I would say the secret sauce on hard drives is when you have bigger hard drives, you constantly have issues, but thanks to ECC error something correction, it basically fixes it before you see it. Thanks to ECC, hard drives that 20 years ago would not have made par, would not have been sold, are now sold today.
Well, I know this is not a free program, but I had purchased it before I got into Linux, and I still have a copy of it. I still run it every 6 months.
Good man.
Spinrite.
Mm-hmm. I knew you were going to say it.
I know this as a free plug for Steve Gibson, but I tell you what, since I've run that, I wish there was an open source version of it, but it is by far the one of the best utilities I've ever used. My thing is, if there's a free, I'll use it's best. If I can find an open source that's better, I'll use it. But if sometimes you just can't find it. So we live in a world that we have to kind of, we gotta be in the world, but we don't have to be of the world. You've heard that expression before. So
yep.
We have to do our best, and sometimes you have to choose the little darker side. But anyway.
I'll say this. It is closed source software, but it doesn't go to benefit a big company that we basically can't trust for Hill of Beans. It instead goes to an individual who I honestly believe that we can trust. But I'll say two quickies. I get the impression from Scott that he almost hates Spinrite. And I think because it hurts his business in the long run because it works. But what he really said he doesn't like about Spinrite is it leaves the data on the drive. And supposedly Spinrite 7, I believe, the next version, Gibson is looking at, while it's doing a scan, giving you the option of cloning all the data to a second drive. And now if that happens, I cannot see any tool being more valuable to hard drive longevity or recovery that would be available for normal people to use.
But he tells you right up front, don't use it on an SSD.
Yep. Well, no, that's the dirty gimmick. You can, as long as you don't use it on above a level 2. Once you go above level 2, then it starts to write to the SSD. You do not want it to write to the SSD because it writes a lot to the SSD. Yeah. But a level 1 or a level 2 basically just reads the drive, which onto itself can fix issues. And I'll say, the good thing about having Scott on a show is, A, he's the smartest person I've ever talked to who has the ability to talk to normal people, which to me, that is like a God's gift kind of thing. Not too many people can do that.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that.
But because of the nature of who he is, at the most, we're lucky to probably get 6 episodes a year out of him because, to be quite frankly honest, I cannot afford to pay him like $300 an episode. So his time to come on the show is down on the totem pole priority because, you know, he's making good money.
Yeah, so basically he says, hey, Steve, Dor, I want to record it, so anything you want, Steve, come on, we'll go right now. But anyway, looking through your list here, I see that you look like you have the server show. You're now doing stuff with servers?
Well, okay, with the server show is when I started to say to myself, it's better to have more shows on than to do every show at a weekly basis. So that was the first show, I believe, where I do on a bi-weekly basis. That is myself being the dumb guy on the show with Chad Wallenberg from Linux Basement.
And he's a smart guy.
He's one of those guys, he lets, how can I put this super friendly? He lets himself get in his way of letting everyone know how smart he is. When you get him to sit down for a couple minutes and just talk frank, he is an unbelievable depth of wealth of knowledge, especially when it comes to servers. For instance, he visits, I want to say Virginia Tech, like twice a year.
Oh, really?
where they are the largest IPv6 network on the planet right now. He is so far ahead of the curve, as far as I'm concerned, with wide area networking and stuff, and administration and Active Directory. You know, I literally have a hard time keeping up with him, but he does a good job of trying to keep it basic. Now, he's on the show. Then we have Jeff Blackhammer Owens, who is the administrator of a business in Indiana. Mm-hmm. With a fairly mid-sized computer network. It's over 20 computers, less than, I think, 300 computers. It's in the middle. And then Josh Knucklehead Tech works for a company where he's also a server network admin, but his network is much more wide, where he might only have a couple computers in each place, but there's lots of places that spread out over multiple states. So we get a real broad range of knowledge on that show. And just like everything else, PodNuts, we try to start with very simple, basic concepts and ideas and explain them and then let the conversation go into something deeper.
Yeah, I like your catchphrase, basic, basic, because it disarms people. They're not expecting to come in and be talked down to. The ones that I've listened to on your network, every one of them's highly approachable. But before we move on, because I got some other pressing questions, I've heard about the guy you used to call him Knucklehead Tech. Is that's right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about him. He sounds just like a fascinating guy.
Dude, he's a knucklehead is the best way I can put it. He is a super insanely long bearded fellow from Idaho in the middle of nowhere. Okay. I mean, there's like wolves and coyotes are the closest thing to him, not computers, not networks, not industries kind of thing. But, he came from much more east of the U.S. And for those outside the U.S., it seems like the farther east you go, the more frank and the more, I'll say brutal people talk. Mm-hmm. And when you go west, it seems like people talk nicer. Well, he's more physically west, but his mind is much more east. he has very little problem telling people exactly what he thinks. And I will say 99% of the time when he opens his mouth, it's because he knows vehemently what he's talking about. He has a very broad range of background. I will say that. Yeah. Insane type of background. He mainly really loves, dare I say, the technical, accurate technical word of hacking. Mm-hmm. He enjoys hacking and tweaking on stuff and just figuring it out. So to me, he's a perfect server admin, because if you have a problem with a server and you don't want to spend 4 hours on the phone call with a vendor, he's the guy who can probably go and get it fixed in 20 minutes.
That's the guy that you hope you get when you need a support call.
Mm-hmm.
Before we move on, is there any of the other shows that you want to just bring to light that you want people to know about?
Well, I mean, I will say Health Nuts also has Chad Wallenberg on it. But if you've ever listened to MythCast, MythCast, or Tilts, Dan Fry is on both of those shows. Him and Chad have had a life of health issues. I'll say that. They were never super healthy when they were young, and for the last X years, they've been working very hard and very serious towards being in better all-around health. They have a show. It's only on episode, I think, two or three, but they're basically sharing their experiences and their knowledge, what they see as being accurate health information. Now, the disclaimer always comes with, they are not doctors. Consult with your doctor. But I will say they also always put a tech spin on stuff, which I think is fascinating. The kinds of discussions they end up talking about, like Fitbit kind of stuff, is quite literally like step one in their step 18 of how they use tech with health. Really smart guys. Really, in my opinion, health type content without the "we look down on you fat people" spin.
Well, that's because all of us have been hiding in our basements playing like hackers, I guess. Nah, so, maybe. More like playing video games. Okay, hey, I've got to know a few things. One, what's your distro choice?
Well, it's kind of... See, I used to be a belligerent hopper where I wouldn't have a distro installed for more than 20 days, maybe? Mm-hmm. But now, for almost the last 10 months, I've had on my main podcasting rig a distribution installed called Hybride. Hybride.
Okay.
And I installed it for a reason, but I'm keeping it around for a completely different reason. The version I'm running is technically Ubuntu 12.04 based. I'm sorry, I like long-term support editions of everything.
I agree.
Now, they have a newer versions out, and some stuff has changed, but in this version, you start with what is basically a Compiz desktop, a super abandoned, bare, light desktop, minimal, super minimal desktop. But while you have applications up and running, you can actively, without logging out and logging in, you can literally actively switch from the default Compiz desktop to KDE, GNOME 3, GNOME Panel, or GNOME 2, Unity, E17, XFCE, LXDE, OpenBox, or FVWM, with your applications remaining open. Hmm. You can actively jump back and forth between desktops. Now, I will say, if you have a lot of stuff open and you jump from one desktop to another, the load process of the other desktop will cause some applications to force quit if you are taxing your system.
Okay.
On the newer Hybride 13.04, I want to say there's like three more desktops you can launch besides them, and it does a much better job of memory management where much less applications force quit.
Well, I tell you what, that sounds pretty cool, but I have a problem with it. Not enough choice. Come on.
I know. Well, here's the gimmick. I installed it because my logic was, okay, like you guys, and to you and me and Larry and Tom, none of us even thought about this, but we are some of the most open podcasters on the market. AKA, anybody can contact any of you guys in any shape, way, or form, and you guys respond like people, because you're people.
We try.
Right. Well, I try to do that too. So my logic was, if I have Hybride installed and I have my email application open and someone asked me a question about another Linux desktop, I don't have to log out. I can just change my desktop and I can answer their question. That was the logic why I put this on my computer. Mm-hmm. But I've kept it around because this initial Compiz desktop is so insanely light. It's perfect to podcast from. I never have to worry about KDE taking over this control of this service or anything. I don't have to worry about Unity crashing. I don't have to worry about not being able to find an application on E17 or, you know, anything like that. It's just a super simple desktop. And then I, on top of it, if I want to load another desktop, I can, but I most of the time don't.
So what other distros are you running in your workflow and in your house? I mean, I'm sure that you've got kids, so mm-hmm. I'm sure you haven't went out and bought licenses to Windows 7 or 8. So what are you running? What are you running around the house for everyday use?
Well, first off, yes, you're right. I'm not paying that kind of money. I was running Solos OS. But I'm not running that anymore. I literally just installed OpenSUSE, I think it's 13.1 again, because I want to give that another kick. I want to put that through its paces again, because I don't think OpenSUSE gets the respect it deserves. I heard you on one of the last Going Lights podcasts. I cannot wait. Bill, I'm literally tingly on the fact that I can't wait to build my son a Steam box. Mm-hmm. Basically a game console that quote unquote he can control.
Oh, yeah.
and run cool games.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I almost can't wait for that. But on everything else, I'm either running Raspberry Pi, Raspbian with OwnCloud on it. I have a laptop over here running SLIDAS just because I don't know. I just run SLIDAS because I need something painful in my life, and SLIDAS is quite painful. Like
It
if you
is
go to
painful.
install, if you go to install Google Chrome, you might as well set aside 4 hours.
Well, first off, your oldest boy is going is should be getting old enough that you hand him the parts and say, "Have at it. Put that machine together if you want to play those games."
Yeah, it is definitely getting close. And I will say this, while Podnuts technically lists 14 episodes on the left-hand side, one of the shows I've been wanting to come out with now for 6+ months, but I haven't found the right angle to it is, I want to do a podcast with me and my son talking about computing. I don't want to say, it's really going to be about life, but in the process, when computer questions come up, I'm going to do my best to be impartial, unbiased, talk to him about all of the possibilities out there, why dad chooses what dad chooses, the pros and cons to everything. That's one of the things I think, like on Android App Addicts, sure, we make fun of iPhone. Why? Because we're an Android podcast. But we also talk about bad things about Android and in Linux for the rest of us. When there's something bad that happens on Linux, we talk about it. We try to be as honest and straightforward about every topic that we cover. So if I do get to do the show with him, I'm going to try to be as honest and straightforward about him. Of course, I'm going to let him make up his own mind, but of course, I'm going to do everything in my power to have him running open software and if possible, open hardware when possible. But he is a man, even though he's only 8 years old right now, he's a man and he can make his own choices.
Well, I think that'd be a great thing. Hopefully, you can con him into you two getting together and building a Steam box. That would be. I can't wait for that to come out. I've already got the case picked out. I've got the graphics cards picked out. I'm ready to go. The interesting thing is that I tried OpenSUSE, but I can break an RPM based distro by just looking at it.
You
So,
sound like me, Bill.
but but so I've been staying with Debian until I run across about 2 years ago. PC Linux OS, and you're gonna hear me talking about that. That is probably I never liked KDE to begin with, but they do that they do it right, and they just come out with a 64-bit version. That was the last thing that kept me from just jumping 100% into it. They do an excellent job, have a friendly community. It's have everything you need, and the guy, his name's Bill Reynolds, is I've had occasion just to speak to him, via email. One of the nicest guys I've ever met. It's always, everybody I've ever talked to at that project have always been wonderful. So, I like that a lot, and I've actually been running that as my main driver. Okay. But I also have a Windows 8 tablet. I have a iPad because wife doesn't want to. It has to meet spousal approval.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. So spousal approval takes precedent. I have a Mac that I've had since 2007. That it's good to know how the different operating systems. Because we do get questions like, how do I make this work with this? And Nightwise really opened my eyes to, we gotta kinda, know a little bit about everything. That,
Oh yeah,
yeah, okay.
absolutely. I mean, I'm a firm believer. I mean, if like you only know how to fix a Chevy car, when you see a Ford, things aren't going to make sense. Where if you know Chevy and Ford, both will make more sense because you understand different ways of doing things. I feel the exact same way about operating systems. While I feel that way, I'm like the doctor that smokes cigarettes because I encourage people to know as much about every operating system, everything, even Sailfish, even Tizen, even all these little oddball ones like Haiku, just because the more you understand about different operating systems, the more you understand about your core operating system.
I still have the when BOS, that's what Haiku is trying to replace. I actually have disks that have never been taken out of their plastic, so they're still sitting in my closet, and I'm thinking about popping one of them out and putting it in a virtual machine just to see if I can get it to work, because you know it worked well back in the day. So we shall see. It'll probably run like you ever tried to run some of those old games on the new and without slowing down the processor, and they just go really, really fast. So
yeah. Well, a super quick question.
Sure.
Pete, you said PC BSD, right?
PC Linux OS.
PC Linux. Sorry, PC Linux OS. That's BSD based, correct?
Nope.
No.
It's Linux.
Okay. Well, and then I guess my last question is, you're waiting for the 64-bit version because it's twice as good as the 32-bit version?
No. I have a weird mentality. If I have a 64-bit processor, I want a 64-bit operating system. Yes, they did have the 32-bit operating system, and they had the PAE kernels that allowed you to address the extra memory. But my thing is, I have a 64-bit processor. I want to use everything. I mean, it's like having a Corvette and having a four-cylinder in it. Just kind of, that's how I look at it. Whether it's right or wrong, that's you know, for someone else to decide. But I got a confrontational question for you now.
Okay.
And stepping into it and then stepping back, just because this has been going on for a while, so it's the whole Arch thing.
Mm.
Yeah, and you know where Arch is, I would consider a pro user. It's not a new user friendly distro. Neither is Gentoo, and even Slackware. Every one of them are great in their own aspects, but you don't throw someone a Arch disk and say, there you go, figure it out. But someone's has come up with Manjaro, and there's a couple others, Archbang, I believe it's called, and they make it easy to install an Arch system. And now there's two common arguments on either side of this. One is, you didn't earn it, therefore you're not allowed, you're not really good enough to run it. And then the other is, what does it matter? It's running. And I kind of look at this side to say, we can make it easier for people to get into something. Then they're going to learn. And then they're going to say, you know what? I did it the easy way the first time. I'm comfortable now. I think I want to try to do it from, you know, the hard way. There's people that are running Arch, not all of them. There's some great people. I've talked to some of them. Some of them are a little more elitist. You know, get off my lawn because you didn't do it the hard way. You didn't compile the kernel. You know what I'm saying.
Oh, so, yeah. The gray-bearded Arch users believe those other things aren't Arch. They have remnants of Arch in them, but they're not really Arch.
But this was the same thing that when Ubuntu was first come out. Oh, it's too easy. You make it things, you know, it's too hard, you know, let me back up. You know, you're taking something that you had to earn. Now you're making it too easy for people. And the whole idea, I thought, of going Linux and Linux for the rest of us and Podnuts Daily and all the other shows, you know, even to the extent of Tilts, but I always consider Tilts more of a bunch of guys getting together and just having a good time. But there's a lot of great, you know, podcast resources for new people. I thought the whole idea was to bring people in to use it. So if we could make it easy for them to use Linux, no matter what, it was a good thing.
Yeah, I'll say most podcasters to me don't seem to be of that same mentality of the arch elitist, I call them, because that's kind of what they are. I will say I understand what they're saying. I understand why they're saying it, but there's different strokes for different folks. You cannot tell somebody they have to learn a certain way. Some people need more, dare I say, motivation. And I was one of those people. If you would have thrown a Arch disk at me when I first was looking at Linux, I would be running Windows 8 today. Because I had a easy entry point, because I could take a graceful path to learning, that was why I learned, and because it was so easy to get up and running initially, the barrier of entry, and to me that's the biggest thing, the barrier of entry was so low, I could run it without comprehending everything. I understand why those people say what they say, I really do, but that doesn't mean, nothing in the universe is black and white. Everything is some sort of shade of gray. Is Ubuntu great? No. Is Arch great? No. Everything has flaws. Everything has imperfections in the long run. And I believe we as a community, we need stuff like Ubuntu around. We need stuff like Linux Mint or AOM around, because without things like Mint, we need the yin and the yang. We need the Slackwares. We need the Gentoos. We need the Arches. We need the Ubuntus. We need the Mints. Without having both of them, I think this would be too much of a siloed environment.
I couldn't have said it any better. And, you know, just as a thought, you know, say you are an Arch user, because I'm actually looking to work on Slack install. I've done it once before, and I had a lot of help. And I want to do it again because they've just revved the version number. But how that worked for me was, hey, here's how you do it. This will help you get this system set up. But then what happens is they say, well, now that you know how to do it, well, why don't you try it this way and see if it works better for you? So basically, it's a gateway drug. You know, yeah, let them use Manjaro to come in, but, you know, be open to saying, hey, you know, I see you use Manjaro. It's really not that hard, and if you have the time, I'll be more than happy to show you how to do it this way, and you might like it better. So, you know, there's different ways to get people involved. So, you know, we've been talking a while, and I really wanted to thank you because, you know, I know it's late where you are, and I only want to keep you for a few more minutes. I want to ask you, what kind of predictions do you have for 2014 for, you know, Linux, for your podcast network, anything that you'd like to see changed, this is the open part where, you know, anything that you have on your mind or you want to say, hey, this is what I'd like to see happen.
Okay, well, first I'll say just a quick tip. If you want to toy with Slackware, I highly encourage you to check out slackermedia.info. Mm-hmm. That is Klaatu from GNU World Order. While it is media, quote-unquote, focused, it's really not. It's really Slackware focused. Uh-huh. He has a very good way of distributing information in a very comprehensible way kind of thing. I highly encourage you check out that site and dig through it a little bit.
But, and Linux for the rest of us, even though it's old, it still has a lot of good information.
Yes. Now predictions.
Yeah, I'm ready
Linux. The Linux ones are easy.
Okay.
Linux will continue to be the most successful thing that people don't know is even there.
Okay.
That's not going to change. No one is still going to know. No one normal is still going to have any clue or concept of what Linux is, where it is, or what it is. They're just going to know they have these appliances that work. And we're going to see more types of appliances, whether they be wristware, wearable computing, or whether they be household kind of things, or whether they be car type of things. Linux is just going to continue to literally explode in front of everyone's face without them even know there's an explosion going on. Nothing's going to change there. It's still going to be the number one supercomputing platform, the number one microcomputing platform, and like cars, I think is the next big obstacle in Linux's way. Audi just said they're working to put Android in their cars. I have little doubt in my mind the majority of car companies are going to have Linux in the dash in one shape or form. Cadillac already did it, and a couple other ones are already looking at it. Even Ford is looking at dropping sync altogether and using Linux solutions. So
yeah, you really don't want to be driving down the highway and your whole dashboard blue screens.
Not good. Not good whatsoever. As far as PANA is concerned, I'm going to predict there's going to be an angel investor who's going to give me $50,000 that will let me quit my job for a year and just work on podcasting. Then I'll have 33 podcasts on the network.
Okay. So it's kind of... So the angel investor can just go already come and go. I mean, come and drop the cash off. You're ready.
Yeah, just a silent angel investor come by, drop off some money, and then just leave.
All right. Well, yeah, as it is getting late, I wanted to also thank you again, Dor, for taking the time. I know you've just probably done one or two shows tonight, and then it's already almost 12 o'clock at night, and you probably got to go to work tomorrow on top of everything else. So I want to let you know that anytime you're free, come on over, and you're always welcome on the Going Linux podcast, and we just value your efforts and how hard you're working. I really have to say that you hit the ground running, and I don't believe you've taken more than two or three breaths, and you're still going strong. So the best thing I can say is just keep up the good work, man. Keep the faith, and thank you from the bottom of my heart and Larry's that you took the time to talk to us, and we look forward to hearing great things from you.
No problem. Thank you very much, Bill.
Uh-huh. No problem, buddy. Thanks for everything. Bye-bye.
Bill, thanks for doing that interview. I think, Dor, I learned quite a few things about some of the podcasts on his network that I don't listen to.
Yeah.
Very interesting stuff. Great roundup of an overview of some of the things that maybe some of our listeners haven't listened to, and you should go take a listen to them a little bit at least. And I know he referred to Steve C. a lot, especially at the beginning. Steve C. is Steve Cherubino, and as Dor says, he's the original founder of the Podnuts Network. So I just wanted to kind of clarify that a little bit. So what was what was the part of the interview you liked the best?
I kind of enjoyed the way him going into, you know, his process of setting up his podcast network.
Yeah.
And setting up different podcasts for different people. I think he's at now at like 14 podcasts now.
Hmm.
But one of the nice things about Dory, he's very approachable. He's really, really busy, of course. But I think he really, you know, he eats his own dog food, you've heard people say. You know, he actually uses the stuff that he endorses. So, as a general rule, it was just good to get to know another fellow podcaster and see how he goes and does runs his podcast. And it was just real good. I enjoyed it. Like I said, some of the stuff he did, and kind of outtakes is, he was just really friendly, nice guy. So I encourage everybody, if you get a chance, to show him some love and check out some of his podcasts. I listen and I quite enjoy them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Go give a listen. Yeah. So in our next episode, we will have listener feedback. Yay. Until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe. We are the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux Podcast Google Plus community.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.